From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
And welcome to the Doctor Is In podcast. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and we have the Doctor.
Hi, I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR. It's a pleasure to be here.
There you go, Joel. Hey, vertical antennas.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about verticals. Everybody has one, it seems, especially those who are in compromised situations where they can't put up a long dipole, much less a beam on a tower. But a number of things have occurred to me and have occurred to our readers as well. And I want to lead off with one popular one, as a matter of fact. Why a 43-foot vertical? You see that all the time. 43-foot multiband vertical. What's magical about 43 feet?
Well, 43 feet is magical because it happens to be 5/8 of a wavelength on 20 meters. And 5/8 of a wavelength in a single vertical element is the tallest you can get and still have all of your radiation on that frequency at low angles with the maximum gain. If you go any higher than that, you start to get multiple lobes at higher angles, and thus less energy where you want it and more pickup of closer in interference and noise. So for 20 meters, it's an optimum height for a vertical antenna. The only exception to that would be if you had multiple elements or you did a fancy phased array system of multiple elements on top of each other. But for a single element, 43 feet is the best you can do for 20 meters. Now, what else can you do in terms of multiband? Any other band, you have to do something different about it to make it work. And oh, by the way, on 20 meters, it's not a slam dunk because the impedance is very capacitive and has a high SWR if you just hook a coax to it. So you need to do some kind of matching, mainly putting in some series inductance at the base. And on every other band, it also requires some kind of matching. So there's no free lunch here with that. You've got to do something about it to make it play well. But all of that is stuff you can do on the ground, which is much easier than doing things, changing antenna height or whatever.
Would the matching necessarily consist of perhaps an antenna tuner at the base of a 43-foot?
An antenna tuner may and probably can tune it, but it's pushing the envelope of antenna tuners. And if there's a problem, you just need to put some series inductance in it, and then for sure it'll tune. I don't have the number in the top of my head, but it's fairly easy to calculate. And I should put in a little commercial here. If people have questions or want to know more details about this, by all means, drop me an email at thedoctor@arrl.org, and I'll get the response back to you quickly, and I can give you the exact inductance that you need and how to wind it if you want to do that. But I think in many cases, the wide-range antenna tuner designed for, let's say, single-wire antennas or unbalanced loads can match a 43-footer on 20 meters.
When you say it's pushing the envelope of the tuner, what do you mean exactly by it? You just mean the impedance range or something else?
The impedance range. In other words, it's a very high SWR, and I don't have at the tip of my tongue the exact number, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it's well above 10 to 1 SWR, and that's about the range that most tuners are designed to work. So if you find your tuner can't handle it, just put in a little inductance until it does work, and it'll just series inductance, pieces of wire around some PVC tubing or something, and before no long you'll have it matching just fine.
Well, what about, I also see 33-foot verticals. What's the magic of 33-foot versus 43?
Well, 33-foot is magic because it's a quarter wave on 40 meters, roughly. And that makes it very easy to match on 40 meters because it's almost a perfect match to 50-ohm coax. In fact, if you have lossy ground, if you have 16 ohms of ground loss, you'll have a perfect match. If you have a 1.5 to 1 SWR, you might have a much better performing antenna, but you have a little bit of a mismatch. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is if you want to use it on 20, it's a half wave, which radiates very well. But the problem is it's a very high impedance. And again, you're into the question of how do you match it. And there are a number of ways to do it. A quarter wave transmission line section of fairly high impedance will bring it down to something that can be matched. But again, many tuners have trouble matching it because it's far above 10 to 1 SWR on 20. On 80 meters, it's... Again, it requires inductive reactance to make it come down. It also has a very low resistive impedance, so it tends to be less efficient mm-hmm. than a full quarter wave. But let's face it, a full quarter wave on 80 is not necessarily easy to do unless you have a lot of cooperative trees.
Oh, yeah.
And a good bow and arrow or something.
Well, that brings up the next topic. Whenever you talk about vertical antennas, you invariably have to talk about radials.
That's true. It's almost always true.
Well, okay. See, that's where I'm headed. You have seen vertical antennas. We won't go to specific models or manufacturers, but you've seen vertical antennas that are advertised as not requiring radials. How do you feel about that, Joel?
Well, the most obvious vertical antenna that doesn't require a radial is a half-wave vertical dipole fed in the center with coax cable.
Yes.
And that works very well. And the only problem with that is if you have room, height to handle a half-wave vertical antenna, you're probably better off with a half-wave half-wave horizontal antenna, half a wave high. And if you have just that one support that can hold the vertical up, you could put up an inverted V, and the horizontal antenna will outperform the vertical in that situation. Also doesn't need radials.
Yes.
But the other kind of antennas that don't need radials are other kinds of electrical half waves. Keep in mind that the reason you have radials is because they're acting like the other half of the antenna. You have a quarter wave monopole and you have radials. Well, the radials are acting like the other half of a half wave antenna. And in fact, if you had a half wave antenna and bent the bottom half out, laid it on the ground, you'd have a quarter wave antenna with one radial. That would kind of work.
Kind of work. You're smiling as you say that. That would kind of work.
Antennas are always compromises, and one aspect of the compromise is something that's easy to install and easy to use, and one element or one radial antenna is much easier to install than a 60 a radial antenna, for example.
Well, if you're using elevated radials, and we'll talk in a moment about radials on the ground, but if you're using elevated radials, do you only require, in a multi-band situation, let's say, do you only require one radial per band, or two, or what?
If they're elevated, one will work, two will work better, three is even better, but you don't need to go much more than that. Now, if you have one or two, well, two that are opposite each other are very close in performance to four in my modeling. There's a little bit of a less than totally omnidirectional performance. I have a 80 meter ground plane, which is wires hung from a tree, and I have two radials on that elevated off the ground that are at about 45 degree angle to each other, and they're kind of on the two edges of Europe from my location.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with that is I actually get a little bit of a preference towards that direction, about a 2 dB front to back ratio, which is nothing to be too excited about, except it doesn't hurt me working Europe on 80 and 75 meters. And the other side of that circle around the base is lawn, where people mm-hmm. are. So by having them just in the woods side, I just interfere with the squirrels and deer and stuff. So it's not a bad thing. So that it's not the end of the world if they're not equally around the antenna
yes.
and if there aren't a large number of them. But it gets more directional with fewer radials. Typically, in the preferred direction is towards the radial if there's a single one. The difference is not great, but... it'll work.
But now you're still talking about elevated radials?
Elevated.
Now, okay, then that gives us a good transition. What about radials on the ground? I know that we had a QST author a while back, Rudy Severns, who
Absolutely.
Wrote a groundbreaking article on how many radials you
he
need.
Did.
But in a real practical application, how many radials? Oh, you've got the article. Okay.
It depends. The amount of improvement you get depends on how long the antenna is. Now, if it's a quarter-wave monopole, you get a couple of dB improvement by having numbers up to, let's say, 60-some-odd radials on or under the just under the ground, quarter wavelength long. But if you had, let's say, 16 radials, you're just down a few tenths of a dB, and then it starts to really reduce in intensity. But based on Rudy's experimental work, and I really suggest anybody that does vertical antennas, look this up on the QST article archive. It's in March 2010, Rudy Severn's N6LF. It's got the full story on what really happens with different size antennas and different types of ground systems. And I recommend it's must reading for anybody. It'll save you a lot of work. But it definitely the performance improves rapidly with the first 4, 8, 16 radials, and then kind of asymptotically tapers off.
Tapers off, really.
So if you're a broadcast station and you've got FCC requirements on your efficiency and ground system, you will put 120 half-wave radials in a swamp.
Yes.
If you're Joe Hamm, chances are you'll decide to do something a little less extreme, and the performance will not be that far down.
So 16 might not be half bad.
No, 16 would be good. And there's another corollary to that rule, and that is if you can't put down a lot of long radials, you're better off with a large number of short radials than a small number of long ones. You know, given this a fixed amount of wire that you found someplace, you're better off not making a small number of long radials, but putting in a larger number of short ones. Because the current near the antenna itself is much more intense, and it wants to find a home, a way to get back to the return of the antenna feed. And the more radials you have for it to find, the less ground it has to go through, and the ground is what eats up the power. You warm up the worms instead of radiating RF energy.
Well, now, just as a hypothetical, and actually, it's similar to the inverted L antenna that I have. 16 radials, do they have to be of a particular length? I mean, what if it's 16 radials, but each radial is only, let's say, 10 feet in length?
Yeah, the length of a radial in a buried or on-the-ground system is not terribly critical because it's a whole different animal from an elevated radial. An elevated radial is kind of like half of the dipole. So if it's a quarter-wave monopole, it wants to be a quarter-wave radial. And if you have a couple of them, that's fine too. But once you're on the ground or under the ground, you're trying to make a artificial connection to the ground itself. And therefore, some people bury an old Model T Ford or washing machines or something and swear by the performance. I think that doesn't work necessarily real well, but not only that, it takes a big hole. But a bunch of short radials, 10 feet long, will be better than a couple of, like, 2 30-foot radials, let's say. So,
do they have to be buried?
No. On the ground and buried is virtually identical. And by the way, if they're on the ground in most environments, you come back a year or so later and they're buried.
Well, the grass has grown over them.
And yeah.
What about insulated versus non-insulated?
I have not been able to find out that there's any difference. I think there might be some advantage in terms of lightning protection with bare wire. But as far as RF performance, I think it's the same. And the insulated ones have the advantage that they're less likely to corrode and disappear. One of the problems with buried radials is once you put them in the ground, you really don't know if they're still there or not.
That's right. And what about the gauge of the wire? Does that matter?
That's strictly a mechanical kind of thing. If it's heavier wire, it'll take longer to disappear.
Yes.
And less likely to break. You have ground. If you live in the northern climates, you will have ground motion during the winter that can break wires. So a good strategy is to just add a few radials every year while you're planting the garden or whatever else. Just go stick some radials in or down on the ground. And if your radials haven't broken, the performance will just get better and better. If some of them have broken, then maybe you'll just kind of keep the status quo. But adding radials is easy compared to putting up antennas, let's say, for most of us. And since they don't have to be buried, just roll out some wire and hook it up.
Well, and this could be any old wire, whatever you happen to pick up at a flea market or whatever, really.
I think copper or aluminum wire, any old wire can work.
I heard aluminum, though, allegedly, that if you bury aluminum, the acids in the soil will just turn it to powder. Is that true?
I'm not aware of that. I use aluminum wires in my ground system, and I haven't noticed that they've disappeared. Of course, I can't look under the ground.
How would you know? Yeah.
I know. but they've been in common use for a long time. And the one caveat about that is I got a question not too long ago about galvanized steel, because there's a lot of that around. And the shorter answer is, as long as the galvanizing is there, the zinc coating, it will work well and perform very similarly to copper or aluminum. If the galvanizing disappears, you have two problems. One, the steel will not be long behind it in disappearing because it's of its nature. But the other thing that happens is the steel has a certain amount of magnetic permeability, which increases the impedance of those wires. It varies widely depending on the exact characteristics of the steel. And if it's something you picked up at the dump, you have no idea what it is or what you're dealing with, and it can be much less efficient than copper or aluminum. If it's just the resistive properties you have to worry about, it's not that different, but the magnetic properties can make quite a difference.
Yes. Well, we're getting near the end of our time, but before we do, I want to see if you'll explode one myth, or maybe you'll verify it, okay? Verticals are noisy, inherently noisy antennas. That's one. Or the one you know better, verticals radiate poorly in all directions. Can you address those myths?
Okay. The first one, each antenna has its own directivity qualities. Verticals tend to mostly respond to lower angle signals and have, in typical environments, have a fair amount of loss at very low angles along the ground, the exception being if they're right up on salt water. I think the noise is a question of where the noise is coming from. If the noise is coming from high angles, as would be often the atmospheric noise is a result of lightning strikes hundreds of miles away, they tend to propagate via near vertical incident sky wave, which tends to come in at high angles.
Mm-hmm.
Vertical antennas don't respond to high angles, so the short answer is they should be less affected by that kind of noise. Now, if you have a particular kind of noise, a noise source in the neighborhood that happens to be running on coupling via vertical wires, it'll couple more dramatically. So I think it depends very much on the exact nature of the noise, but I think the key is the question of what directions and angles the antenna responds to.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a Yagi that you can point, you can point it away from the noise sources. The vertical antenna that receives from all directions will pick up noise from any direction. So, and I don't think there's a dramatic difference. And I know there are people who believe that there is, and I've never been able to find it. I have an 80 vertical and horizontal antenna. I have not noticed a difference in the noise level, particularly between them at my house. So I don't know what
But what about performance? I mean, will a dipole, just a standard wired dipole, always win over a vertical?
It always will at the angle at which it wants to radiate, the elevation angle.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, a dipole has a couple things going for it in terms of performance. One is it's not unidirectional, so it has about 2 dB gain perpendicular to the axis of the wire compared to what it would be if it were omnidirectional. So the vertical antenna radiates equally in all directions. Now, if you happen to want to talk to somebody that's off the end of your dipole, where your dipole may be down 20 or 30 dB at that particular angle, the vertical will run rings around it because the vertical is happy working in all directions. That's the azimuth pattern. The other part of the pattern is the elevation pattern. A horizontal antenna has a ground reflection that is out of phase with the signal that originates from the antenna, which means they combine together in phase only when the distance from the antenna itself and the difference from the reflected signal is 180 degrees. If a dipole is up at a height of half a wavelength, which is fairly typical for 40-meter dipoles, let's say, that peak is at about 30 degrees elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of intensity that you get at that peak is about 6 dB compared to what it would be if it were not having a reflection. So if you want to talk to somebody that you can reach by an ionospheric propagation mode that wants to leave at 30 degrees, you will have 6 dB gain over a antenna that propagates equally at all elevation angles, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real difference, and that's important. It's like the gain of a 3 dB or 3-element Yagi, for example.
Yes.
So now the thing is, is 30 degrees the angle you want to propagate it? Well, if you're looking for DX, you really want to propagate between, let's say, 5 and 10 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Now that dipole will be down in intensity at those angles where it compares to a vertical monopole. So for DX work, it may well be that the vertical will have an advantage for, at the very low angle. So that's why you find serious DXers use horizontal antennas at, on the bands from typically 20 meters or 30 meters and up in frequency, and they tend to go to verticals for the lower frequency bands because they can't get them up high enough to have a response at very low angles. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the gain at 2, 3, 5 degrees of elevation, a vertical will do better than a horizontal unless you can get it up very high.
Okay.
So it all depends. It's one of those all depends kinds of things.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Can you come over and put some more radials down beneath my inverted L?
Oh, I certainly can do that. I do make house calls. I'm not cheap, though.
Thank you very much, Joel.
My pleasure. Anytime.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.